All right, guys. Welcome. Welcome to Historic Ballers, number one. You guys always wondered, hey, who built America? I mean, why is this car here? Why is this, you know, why are there people that take dogs on planes? I mean, who made that possible? What did we do before electricity? What did we do before what did we do without fucking kerosene? I mean, you know who? You start learning these things. And these fucking guys, man. These, first of all, Patreon.com, the easiest way to support the show. You guys are the producers of the show. I start thinking, I stop posting on fucking Instagram, and I'm not posting any. You know what? I'm boycotting that shit because I start to think, who's that for? Really? The only people that might be interested in that like 10 years from now is if you have a real connection with a loved one, or 20 years, your great grandkid looks back and goes, God damn, you are a fucking idiot. Why are you such a cunt? And these are questions that I hope answering when I look into my grandkids, great grandkids eyeballs, and they type in Uncle Dust. So this program is sponsored by NPR. It's also sponsored by Black Trans of America. It is sponsored by Bud Light and also Donald Trump. So we'd like to take this time to thank our sponsors who are also maybe future historic ballers. I mean, these guys are going to be fun. These guys are killing it now. I mean, I don't know how much money Donald Trump got, but it's more than I got. I mean, I'm looking at my Cash App, and it's about 35. I'm going to start handing out my Cash App. Well, I don't know what I'm fucking bullshitting. It's out there somewhere. It's out there somewhere. Fuck. And if anybody here is a fan, I'm just telling you this. Fans, listen, fans. You're going to hear fans. Deal with it. Okay? This isn't fucking the Joe Rogan goddamn experience. I don't have a what looks like a goddamn psychedelic space shuttle, probably on a compound with Navy SEALs protecting it. I got a dog that's 130 pounds that barks occasionally when my fucking drunk, methed out neighbor tries to open my door. Not so much as he's trying to murder me, is that he's just so high, he thinks it's his house. And so therefore I have to lock the door. But sometimes your boy forgets and you end up with a 45-year-old guy yelling about there's a fire in his house and his kids are on fire. I know him well enough to know he doesn't even have kids. And to tie it in together, guys, I know you go, where the fuck is this going, Dust? That we were talking about Vanderbilt. This guy also fucked his cousin and tells me that it's like the one thing he had to take his cousin to get her an abortion in Oklahoma in, I don't know, I guess the 90s or early 2000s. That's about all I need to know. It's fine. Do what you do. Be safe. I mean, if cousin fucking isn't banned in your neck of the woods, I mean, have at it. I got your back, bro. I mean, you only fight in love once. Are we supposed to? Whose social contract says it's not good to have fornication with your cousin? I feel just do what you do. Be safe, man. You know, I'm not going to listen to all. We can't just listen to all laws of the land. We weren't there. We didn't vote on it. You know, if you want to run back every time a child is born, we should run back all the laws and vote on them. And the majority wins. Tying that all together is today's number one He isn't number one. I was thinking it was going to be a toss-up between Rockefeller, John D., respect to, and Cornelius Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, I picked Vanderbilt, man. I like Vandy. You know, the guy was a guy's guy. John D., he's a little, you know, stone cold, didn't seem like there was any feelings. Like, he had zero feelings. And he also thought he was one of these guys that's like, well, I can crush you because God said, you know. And, I mean, that's the type of personality that would have wiped out a goddamn nation 400 years ago if he was in charge. So, it's all good, though. But, I mean, my man, not only, as we'll find out, you know, let's just get into it, man. Cornelius Vanderbilt, bro. Okay. Born in Staten Island, New York, 1794. I mean, this is back in the day. This is like, you're talking about May. What is this? Landed on Plymouth Rock to Cornelius Vanderbilt. I want a van in between my names. You know that you're full of shit when you got a van. Or you're a rape murderer in van, like Vandersloot. And you're raping and killing 16 to 18 year old fucking American tourists in Bermuda. Or was it? No, it was Bermuda, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you to Bahama. Come on, come on, pretty mama. That's a song he was singing to suck her in before he Vanda saluted her, which should be, that's like an action word. You can use it. An adjective? It's an adjective, guys. And Cornelius Vanderbilt and Phoebe Hand. That's a name you don't hear too much anymore. Phoebe Hand. He began working on his father's ferry in New York Harbor as a boy, quitting school at the age of 11, which, I mean, I think that's about right during those times. That's kind of what you did, right? I mean, you had to start chipping in early. You know, welfare, there was no welfare. Nobody's helping anything. I mean, unless your mom, I mean, you know, you don't want poor Ma out there showing her ankles to the people to get, you know, her ankles spit on. There was probably some crazy, you could probably back then, like if OnlyFans started back in the 1700s, right? Everybody be dressed from head to toe, the women, and all they'd have to do is show like just a calf, be a calf on OnlyFans, and somebody just spitting on the calf. That cat, that would blow up 50% of men on 1700 OnlyFans. Their heads would fucking implode from seeing spit on a calf, bro. Oh, how hot was that back then? You'd just have a drawing. Somebody just drawing a nice bare ankle. According to one version of events, he borrowed $100, equivalent to $1,900 in 2022. So what's that, 20 times the from his mother to purchase a Perry auger? A shallow draft or flat bottom two-mast sailing vessel. Oh, you're not going to use, guys. I know you can't see this, but I know you're thinking, well, how many slaves can you fit on it, Dust? Right? It's the first question you think when you're going to buy a boat. I mean, even if you're not into slaving, you're still going to be like, I mean, but if I did, shallow draft, which he christened the Swift Sure. However, according to the first account of his life, published in 1853, the Perry auger belonged to his father, and the younger Vanderbilt received half the profit. He began his business by ferrying freight and passengers on a ferry between Staten Island and Manhattan. Such was his energy and eagerness in his trade that other captains nearby took to calling him the Commodore in jest. Come here, you Commodore, you chop. What are you shipping today over there to the old Manhattan? Oh. A nickname that stuck with him all his life. While many Vanderbilt family members had joined the Episcopal Church, an Anglican communion, mainline Protestant denomination, Cornelius Vanderbilt remained a member of the Moravian Church, which dates back to the Bohemian Reformation of the 15th century and the unity of brethren founded in the Kingdom of Bohemia. Till his death, along with other members of the Vanderbilt family, he helped erect a local Moravian parish church in his city. On December 19, 1813, at age 19, Vanderbilt married his first cousin, Sophia Johnson. Getting that good. Not even step cousin pussy. That's not even step. Dude, he's going right to the well. They moved into a boarding house on Broad Street in Manhattan. They had 13 children together. When you have 13, I mean, how turned on are you? That's the kind of guy you needed. That's why there shouldn't be laws. I don't even do what you do. Be safe. If you and your sister are ready to fucking take it to Pound Town and have a respectable family together, spit out 13 kids and raise, who am I to tell you you can't do that? You know, do what you do. Be safe, guys. You know, who do you trust more than your loving sister that you shared a house with for 14 to 18 years? You know everything about her already. You might as well see how that good stuff tastes. So they had 13 children together. Phoebe in 1814, Ethelinda in 1817, Eliza, William, Emily, Sophia, Maria, Francis, Cornelius Jeremiah, George, who died in 1836 at the age of 4, Mary in 1834, Catherine in 1836, and another same named George in 1839. In addition to running his ferry and raising his what is that? Your second cousins? Are you raising your second cousins? How many times divided is that? I don't know calculus. We need an incest calculator for that situation. Vanderbilt bought his brother-in-law John D. Forrest schooner, a type of sailing vessel defined by its rig. The foremast generally being shorter than the mainmast, a common variant. The topsail schooner also has a square topsail. Charlotte, and traded in food and merchandise in partnership with his father and others. But on November 24th, 1817, a ferry entrepreneur named Thomas Gibbons, a planner, politician, lawyer, and steamboat owner, asked Vanderbilt to captain his steamboat between New Jersey and New York. Although Vanderbilt kept his own businesses running, he became Gibson's business manager. I mean, this guy's moving up the ranks, man. You know, putting one cousin fucking foot right in front of the other, folks. That's what you're doing. I'm not here to judge people. I mean, do what you do, be safe. But, I mean, now you got a whole pack of cousin kids that you can use on your, bring them all into the fam business. You know, I don't know how many cousins you can have sex with and have kids before things go bad. You know, we'll find out. I mean, I'm sure we're going to find out, guys. When Vanderbilt entered his new position, Gibbons was fighting against a steamboat monopoly in New York waters, which had been granted by the New York State legislature. The Constitution of New York does not designate an official term for the two houses together. To the politically influential patrician Robert Livingston, a lawyer, politician, and diplomat known as the Chancellor. I love these guys' nicknames, dude. They're not like, these are so much better than today's nicknames. Like Bubba, you know, Lil Wigga, Lil Dank, Lil Park, Big Meat, the Chancellor, bro, the Commodore. Put some respect. Yeah, everybody's going to do a little something that people are going to look at it sideways in your life. That you just got to go with what you love, chase your dreams, follow your passion. Right into between the legs of Sophia, your cousin. Not a big deal, guys. Who had designed the steamboat? Though both Livingston and Fulton had died by the time Vanderbilt started working for Gibbons, But the monopoly was held by Livingston as they had granted a license to Aaron Ogden to run a ferry between New York and New Jersey. Gibbons launched his steamboat venture because of a personal dispute with Ogden, whom he helped to drive into bankruptcy. To accomplish this, he undercut prices and also brought a landmark legal case, Gibbons versus Ogden, to the United States Supreme Court. I mean, this was a great time because they're making the rules as they go back then. There's no rules against monopoly like in before this. So if you just got that much entrepreneurship, you're not going to not crush the competition and buy up, as we're going to find out as we keep going down historic baller lane. You're going to find out that this is just what it was. This is what they did, but it's the spirit is not contained somehow by laws. I mean, we're going to see that you're not going to not crush the competition. I mean, not like today where people just make a better product. Like they're buying, they're undercutting, they're printing too many stocks. They're making fake stocks in the company to have the guy that's trying to buy out the company pay triple, 10 times. The guys are making $1 billion off printing stocks and just watering it down. Beautiful time. This is a beautiful time for uncontained greed to just steamroll people. Working for Gibbons, Vanderbilt learned to operate a large and complicated business. He moved with his family to New Brunswick, New Jersey. A stop on Gibbons' line between New York and Philadelphia. There, his cousin/wife, Sophia, operated a very profitable inn. I wonder if it was for other cousin sexers. What are you going to do? You going to go in there and fornicate with cuzzy? Yes, I am. Yes, I is. That'd be a black one. That's a black cousin fucker. Yes, I is, ma'am. Using the proceeds to feed, clothe, and educate their children/cousins. Vanderbilt also proved a quick study in legal matters, representing Gibbons in meetings with lawyers. He also went to Washington, D.C. to hire Daniel Webster, an American lawyer statesman who represented New Hampshire and Massachusetts and served as the Secretary of State under Presidents Harrison, Tyler, and Fillmore. This guy never pumped a piece of puss. I'm looking at his picture, guys. I can tell you he's never stayed in a piece of puss longer than he had to. He would tell you that it's unpatriotic. It's ungodly to pump any more than the minimal times that it takes to procreate. I mean, this guy is a stern believer in 5 to 12. He went 12, and he was disgusted by himself. He got up and was shame. He was full of shame. I shouldn't have pumped 12 times. To argue the case before the Supreme Court, Vanderbilt appealed his own case against the monopoly to Supreme Court, which was the next on the docket after Gibbons versus Ogden. The court never heard Vanderbilt's case because on March 2nd, 1824, it ruled in Supreme Court Gibbons' favor, saying the states had no power to interfere with interstate commerce. The case is still considered a landmark ruling. The protection of competitive interstate commerce is considered the basis for much of the prosperity which the United States has generated. Amen. God killed the queen. So after Thomas Gibbons died in 1826, Vanderbilt worked for Gibbons' son, William, until 1829. Though he had always run his own business on the side, he now worked entirely for himself. There's nobody to lean on. Step by step, he started lines between NY and the surrounding region. First, he took over Gibson's ferry to New Jersey. He said, that motherfucker's, you know, he's dead. I mean, what the fuck's he going to do with that shit? I'll take it. He went over there and knocked on the door. Hey, could I bother you, Miss Gibbons, to buy your old crusty Gibson's wares? Then switched to Western Long Island Sound. In 1839, he took over his brother Jacob's line to Peekskill, New York, on the lower Hudson River. That year, he faced opposition by a steamboat operated by Daniel Drew, an American businessman, railroad developer, which we will, this character will come through the historic ballers line of balling. He's a baller himself. He might not be known now as a right off the bat as an historic baller, but he was. Summarizing his life, Henry Clews wrote, "Of all the great operators of Wall Street, Daniel Drew furnishes the most remarkable instance of immense and long-continued success." Who forced Vanderbilt to buy him out? Impressed, Vanderbilt became a secret partner with Drew for the next 30 years. So that the two men would have an initiative to avoid competing with each other. This is something that we'll find out that John D. Rockefeller knew nothing about. That he did not avoid competing. He just said, "Fuck you guys. I'll kill you. I'll crush you." Not physically. He'll buy you and burn down your business rather than you make a cent competing. He could have been number one. I mean, we could have kicked it off, but I like Vandy. I'm a fan of Vandy a little more than John D. So fucking deal with it, man. God. On October 8th, 1833, Vanderbilt was nearly killed in a Hightstown rail accident between Hightstown, New Jersey, and Spotwood on 8 November, just 2 months after horses were replaced by steam locomotives on the line. So we had horses pulling locomotives on the line. That's insane. It is the earliest recorded train accident involving the death of passengers. On the Camden and Amboy Railroad in Jersey, also on the train was former President John Quincy Adams. Huh, small world. I mean, literally, kind of was a small world. I mean, what was the population at this time? A million, maybe, in America? In 1834, Vanderbilt competed on the Hudson River against the Hudson River Steamboat Association, a steamboat monopoly between New York City and Albany, using the name the People's Line. It was anything but. He used the populist language associated with Democratic President Andrew Jackson to get popular support for his business. At the end of the year, the monopoly paid him a large amount to stop competing, and he switched his operations to Long Island Sound. During the 1830s, textile mills were built in large numbers in New England. As the United States developed its manufacturing base, some of its first railroads in the United States were built from Boston to Long Island Sound to connect with steamboats that ran in New York. By the end of the decade, Vanderbilt dominated the steamboat business on the Sound. This motherfucker didn't play, and began to take over management of the connecting railroads in the 1840s. He launched a campaign to take over the most attractive of these lines, the New York, Providence, and Boston Railroad, popularly known as the Stonington. Are you going for a ride on the Stonington? By cutting fares on competing lines, Vanderbilt drove down the Stonington price and took over the presidency of the company in 1847. This guy's on his way up. He's dominating. He's buying out businesses. He's moving all competition. He's positioned himself. He's trying to position himself as the one and only railroad man in America. I mean, I don't know what else he's doing, but he wakes up and he's like, let's go with them. He loves to hear the sound of Chinese clitter clatter as they're building a railroad. Oh, I think we got a truck right now. Oh. Oh, you wash out. You wash out now, Papa Vanderbilt walking by. He finna cut our rice ration. Oh, scene. By cutting on competing lines, Vanderbilt joined him. During these years, Vanderbilt also operated many other businesses. He bought large amounts of real estate in Manhattan and Staten Island. He took over the Staten Island Ferry in 1838. It was in the 1830s when he was first referred to as the Commodore. Oh, Commodore, that good old chop. Really, a ladies, he gets them right in the knickers. Then the highest rank in the United States Navy, a common nickname for important steamboat entrepreneurs. By the end of the 1840s, was applied only to Vanderbilt. Everybody else that had the nickname Commodore in America ceased being called the Commodore by the end of the 1840s. I dare you to try to nickname your boy the Commodore in 1841, dude, 1842. See what would happen. Get run up on. Get horsed up on, man. Oh, fucking slay your ass. Knock, knock. Hit the motherfucking Commodore cop. Pop, pop. Grid Opt. Ocean going steam lines. When the California Gold Rush began in 1849, Vanderbilt switched from regional steamboat lines to ocean-going steamships. Many of the migrants to California and almost all the gold returning to the East Coast went by steamship to Panama, bordered by Costa Rica to the west and Colombia to the southeast, where mule trains and canoes provided transportation across the isthmus. The Panama Railroad was soon built to provide a faster crossing. Is that Teddy Roosevelt? I think Teddy Roosevelt got that done. He's not going to make a historic baller, but I mean, he's a historic balling adjacent. I mean, the guy was the fucking shit. The guy was the man. He's a goddamn saint. We needed to have Teddy Rose for us to respectfully bleed red, white, and blue and jerk off to xnxx.com. 21 sextury. But he did start a steamship line to Nicaragua and founded the Accessory Transit Company to carry passengers across Nicaragua by steamboat on the lake and river with a 12-mile carriage road between the Pacific port of San Juan and Virgin Bay. In 1852, a dispute with Joe L. White, a partner in the Accessory Transit Company, led to a business battle in which Vanderbilt forced the company to buy his ships for an inflated price. In early 1853, he took his family on a grand tour of Europe. Hey, kids, cousins, hell, we're going to Europe. I don't know why he sounds like a redneck. At this point, he sounds like a redneck. You might be a redneck if you have 13 cousin fucking kids, hell. There's a sound of fucking, there he is right there in the background, guys, if you can hear it. Sound of Vanderbilt's train going right by my house. I'm going to blow that motherfucker up, dude. Steamship yacht, the North Star. While he was away, White conspired with Charles Morgan, Vanderbilt's erstwhile ally, to betray him and deny him money he was owed by the Accessory Transit Company. When Vanderbilt returned from Europe, he retaliated by developing a rival steamship line to California, cutting prices until forced Morgan and White to pay him off. You fitting to pay me. You fitting to pay the kid. I don't know why he sounds like a cartoon fucking hood black guy. You fitting to pay me. I'm fitting to run up in your motherfucking cousin's pussy. I'm fitting to do what I do to that cousin of yours. That cousin pussy, y'all looking awfully good, Mr. Vanderbilt. He then turned to transatlantic steamship lines running in opposition to the heavily subsidized Collins line, headed by Edward Collins. Vanderbilt eventually drove the Collins line into extinction. During the 1850s, Vanderbilt also bought control of a major shipyard and the Allaire Iron Works, one of the first companies dedicated to the construction of marine steam engines, a leading manufacturer in Manhattan. When the Civil War began in 1861, Vanderbilt attempted to donate his largest steamship, the Vanderbilt, to the Union Navy. Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Wells, refused it, thinking its operation and maintenance too expensive for what he expected to be a short war. Yeah. Huh. How'd that work out? Huh. It's like, guys, it's going to last a little bit longer than a couple months, guys. Turns out you guys are going to fuck up the whole country. Huh. It's like, you fucking dummies, dude. You fucking retarded. Huh. It's like the know-it-all guy back then. Oh, it's only going to last a couple months, huh? Okay. Okay, guys. We're just going to have half the country fighting the other half, huh, guys? And then one's going to say, well, we're doing it for the slaves, guys. But really, are we really? When the Confederate ironclad Virginia, popularly known in the North as the Merrimack, wrought havoc with the Union blockading squadron at Hampton Roads, Virginia, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton and President Abraham Lincoln called on Vanderbilt for, yo, Vandy, what's good, son? What are you over there? You over there fucking that Underground Railroad? Fucking Ebony Sister? Lincoln. You know, oh, you know me. You know how I do, Vandy. I'm trying to help the blacks get free. They need to, but I also like that taste of that black. I like a little bit of that underground black pussy. I think Lincoln had a trap door running right from the slave plantations in the South, right up to the White House Oval Office underneath, and he got a little top from some of them sweet, sweet ebony sister slaves. It helped bottle up the Virginia, after which Vanderbilt converted it into a cruiser to hunt for the Confederate commerce raider, Alabama, captained by Raphael Sims. For donating the Vanderbilt, he was awarded a Congressional Medal of Honor. Vanderbilt also paid to outfit a major expedition in New Orleans. He suffered a grievous loss when George Washington Vanderbilt II, his youngest and favorite son, slash cousin, and heir apparent, a graduate of the United States Military Academy of West Point, fell ill and died without even seeing combat. So he's going to have to train somebody else, another one of these cousins slash sons, to step up to the plate. Though Vanderbilt had relinquished his presidency to the Stonington Railroad during the California Gold Rush, he took an interest in several railroads during the 1850s, serving on the boards of directors of the Erie Railway, the Central Railroad of New Jersey, the Hartford, the New Haven, and other havens that we know now for heroin, Puerto Ricans, and other dirty white trash scenarios where you can buy a bootleg Picasso outside of Walmart along with fentanyl and see heroin addicts fighting fentanyl addicts over control of the area. The cycle continues. And the New York and the Harlem, popularly known as the Harlem. In 1863, Vanderbilt took control of the Harlem in a famous stock market corner. Shooting dice in stock market corner? And was elected its president. He later explained that he wanted to show that he could take this railroad, which was generally considered worthless, and make it valuable. It had a key advantage. It was the only steam railroad to enter the center of Manhattan, running down 4th Avenue, later Park Ave, to a station on 26th Street where it connected with a horse-drawn streetcar line. From Manhattan, it ran up to Chatham Four Corners, where it had a connection to the railroads running east and west. I mean, this guy's fucking knee deep, bro. This guy's knee deep. In 1868, Vanderbilt fell into a dispute with Daniel Drew, who had become treasurer of the Erie Railroad, originally connecting the Pavonia Terminal in Jersey City with Lake Erie at Dunkirk, NY. The railroad expanded west to Chicago following its 1865 merger with the Atlantic. To get revenge, he tried to corner Erie stock, which led to the so-called Erie War, which owned and operated the Erie Railroad, built with public funds raised by taxation and on land donated by public officials and private developers. They brought him into direct conflict with Jay Gould and financier James Fisk Jr., known as Big Jim, Diamond Jim, Jubilee Jim, and other blackish names before black started being called Big Jim, Diamond Jim, and Jubilee Jim of the 2000s. American stockbroker and corporate executive who had been referred to as one of the robber barons of the Gilded Age. Though Fisk was admired by the working class in New York, who had just joined Drew on the Erie board, they defeated the corner by issuing watered stock, guys. An asset with an artificially inflated value, the term most commonly refers to a form of security frauds now, in which a company issues stock to someone before receiving at least a par value in payment, which restricted the number of shares a company could issue. But Gold bribed the legislature, this cocksucker, to legalize the new stock. Vanderbilt used the leverage of a lawsuit to recover his losses, but he and Gold became public enemies. Gold never got the better of Vanderbilt. You ain't getting the better of me, you fucking piece of shit. I got fucking news for you. I'll go to goddamn hell before I see you get one more penny from me. And any other important business matter, but he often embarrassed Vanderbilt, who uncharacteristically lashed out at Gold in public. By contrast, Vanderbilt befriended his other foes after the fights ended, including Drew and Cornelius Garrison. So, guys, I mean, this guy's a player. This guy had the looks of what can only be said as I'm looking at it. You know, you picture that famous painting of the two farmers standing side by side with the pitchfork. If you picture them, now picture them fornicating, ejaculating into the ovaries, and then a kid come out. That kid get hit by a bus. They put them back together and then grow out the illest sideburns. I mean, maybe in history. I should just do a whole show on historic sideburns, because I mean, this guy's running a gambit here. Cornelius Vanderbilt died on January 4th, 1877 at his residence. Number 10 Washington Place. I mean, there's probably what? It was probably 100. It went up to 100 Washington Place. You know, 100 houses. And after being confined to his rooms for about 8 months, the immediate cause of death was exhaustion. I mean, the motherfucker was tired, man. He's been killing the game for so long. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? You know? The fuck you want me to do, people? Vanderbilt's over here. He's crushing people, dude. He's fucking taking names. He's making sure you don't. The railroad. He's fucking busy, bro. He's got shit to do. He's tired. Let the motherfucker have a break, dude. Brought on by long suffering from a complication of chronic disorders. Chronic masturbation, if you ask me. I mean, do you think you jerked off? I mean, could you get addicted to like ankle porn back then? You know, like drawings of ankle porn, and then somebody just have like their whole house filled with it. What's fucking Vandy doing, dude? I mean, just papers blowing out everywhere. He's got them tucked everywhere. I mean, because you had to hide it back then. If you wanted to have a little something to look at, you got some in the kitchen under a dish. You know what I mean? You got them in the bathroom, underneath the rug, behind the lion's head on the wall. At the time of his death, age 82, Vanderbilt had an estimated worth of $105 million. In his will, he left 95% of his $105 million estate to his son, Billy, and four grandsons. This left his only other living son, Cornelius Vanderbilt, and nine daughters to receive comparative little inheritance. Those bitches, and he quote, those fucking dirty cousins of mine fend for themselves. Fuck your own cousin and crush other companies. Far less than even their young nephews, Cornel, Ethelinda, and Mary, took the matter of their father's will to court, saying, hey, we want some shit to fuck. Claiming he was not in his right mind in his old age when he drew up that will, that he had been behaving strangely. It was under William's influence, as well as that of a corrupt spiritualist in his employ, who'd allegedly been approached and paid off by William to do so. Go in there and spiritual this motherfucker. Go up there and spirit Cornelius up. You telling him something on the other side, and he ain't getting into them damn pearly gates if you don't break me off most of his treasures. I feel like still at this time, even though I know, it just feels like he had just a bunch of gold coins like fucking Scrooge McDuck. Fucking that's what they're all fighting over. To suggest the spirits during a point in the session when said spiritualist would fall into a trance in the Commodore's presence, claimed William would be the most trustworthy to inherit the estate and business, and that his other children actually hated him. We hate that cocksucker. You know? He said, those kids over there, those other fucking cousin kids from Cousin Love, fuck those kids, dude. They hate him. And we're just waiting for him to die. We're waiting for that old fucking man to die. I'm fitting to get rich. I'm feeling the ball out on it. I want to be a historic baller. That's what comes with being a historic baller, guys. Coming after the throne, your own cousin kids. A spirit during the session came in the form of William's deceased mom, Sophia. Ooh, ooh. Why you over there having that sweet cousin pussy of yours, Vandy? Ooh, I bet you're wondering to fuck me, Vandy. Ooh, don't fuck your cousin slash kids. That's a little too weird at this time, but you ain't going to be able to get away for it in the next 100 years. So maybe do that now. Ooh. Not wanting to risk further public humiliation of the family name in court, William finally settled with his siblings. He gave Cornel an extra 200 G's in cash, a trust fund of 400K, which this is times 20. So what's that? 2 million? 20 million? So that's 20 million. Is that 20? Yeah. No. Times 10 is 2 million. So 4 million? So 4 million in cash and a trust fund of 8 million. He gave Mary and Ethelinda the same settlement. Still, all told, this was comparatively very little, by far the largest estate in the world at the time. William's eldest son, Cornelius Vanderbilt II, received $5 million in the will. So that's, what's that, 20? No. Times 10. No, times 10, that'd be 50. That's fucking, I don't know if they're doing the math already. I can't tell now. No, that's right. Received times 10 is 50, dude. That'd be 100? I guess that's, yeah, because these guys were billionaires. So he gave him 100. He gave him fucking, right? That's right. With his three younger sons, William Kassam Vanderbilt, Frederick, and George Washington II, received $2 million apiece. Vanderbilt willed amounts ranging from $250K to $500K to each of his daughters. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's still, though, it's times 20 in, for the inflation. So even the $250K is times 10 is 2.5 million. So 5 million. So he gave him five million is the lowest. 5 to 10 million. He gave 5 to 10 million to each of his daughters. Jesus, dude. Fucking women complaining as usual. His wife received 500K. His cousin slash wife. She should have got double for being a cousin and a wife. Their New York City home and 2,000 shares of common stock in the Central Railroad. To his younger surviving son, Cornelius Jeremiah Vanderbilt, who he regarded as a wastrel. He left the income from 200K trust fund. Although his daughters and Cornelius received banquets much smaller than those of her brother William, these made them very wealthy by the standards. There we go. Yeah. So this is, they didn't do the math. So that is right. So it's the lowest amount is 5 million. That's the lowest amount he gave to somebody. William's biographer said he vastly improved and expanded the nation's transformation infrastructure, contributing to a transformation of the very geography of the U.S. He embraced new techs, new forms of busy, used them to compete. He helped to create the corporate economy that would define the U.S. in the 21st century. According to Wealthy 100, Vanderbilt would be worth $143 billion in 2007 U.S. dollars if his total wealth as a share of this gross product in 1877. So that's, what's that? Is that Musk numbers? No. It's not Musk numbers, but it's fucking, right? I think Miss, what's Musk worth? 500 million? Is he worth 500 million? They would make him the second wealthiest person in U.S. history. I don't know what, I'm way off then. Well, that's why we're doing historic ballers. We'll work up to fucking future ballers. This would make him the second wealthiest person in the U.S. history after Standard Oil co-founder John D. Rockefeller. Another calculation from 1998 puts him in third place after Andrew Carnegie, which he's going to be on the list of historic ballers. We'll get into Carnegie, the steel magnet, if you will, if you may, if you might. Build something with steel tonight. In real terms, however, Vanderbilt's peak wealth of $105 million in 1877 is only worth $2.89 billion. Oh, they're saying overall. Oh, that's what that number is. If you took, I don't know what the fuck you're saying. Bottom line, he's a historic baller, guys. Thanks for joining. Thanks for balling out with the kid. This is what we do. Support on Patreon. You guys are the producers of the show, the backers of the show, the lifeblood, the historic ballers of the show. You're buying stock. You're part of the stock. We're selling stock. And the balling stock, historically speaking, is on patreon.com/firecrotch. Buy a piece of stock in the company because we're trying to fucking move weights here, guys. Okay, guys? So, that being said, Wednesday, Original Wiggas with myself and Mr. Clifford Focus will be back on as usually scheduled. I went to Vegas, was out there in fucking 110-degree heat to come back to 107-degree heat, so no big deal. I was about to say famished, but that's not true. I drank about at least 100 Coors Lights, ate about an eighth of shrooms, and hung out at Lake Mead in the water with dust storms rolling in. And when you're on shrooms and you start looking at fat, illegal immigrant Mexicans, and they're rubbing themselves with baby oil, you get it. You go, fuck yeah, bro. She probably whipped, makes a mean torta. You know what I'm saying? Plus, they were smart enough to bring like a fucking Walmart tart. They had fucking 18 people under that bitch eating fucking FOD. What is that? What is FUD, dude? F-U-D? What the fuck is that? I see it at Mexican stores all the time. And it's like, you get like 22 pounds of cheese for like fucking 10 bucks. The fuck is FUD? They're getting over on them somehow. I bet if I give that shit a goog, it says it's not even real meat or real cheese or whatever it claims to be. Anywho, that's it. Take us out like we started it. With ye old little Troy, want to be not only a baller, guys. You don't want to be just a baller. You want to go down in history as a historic baller. See you next time. I hit the highway, making money to fly away, but it's got to be a better way, yeah. I'm a baller, I'm a 20-inch crawler, blaze on Impala, diamond drop waller, R10 howler, never leader, not a follower. Break these boys off, I'm a 20-inch. Call a bus a left or right. I'm out of sight, I'm sold. I'm bouncing off the road. I'm in the motor with the bottom chaining to him. Hop by my big body form. Chain with the tongue. Can't forgive me what alarm. I'm hopping, I'm looking good. Diamonds get some wood. Man, it's understood. Got money in my hood. I'm pushing big body, can't stop me. Put a 9-8, gotta sell a million copy. I'ma grow slow, puffin' on the optimo, hit the stove. I'ma go real slow, puffin' on the optimo. I'ma let the stress green, man, I'm looking clean. One more control, three green, and night just clean.
Wanna be a baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades, on the Impala. Caller, get lit tonight. Switch the road tight, got spray with ice. I hit the highway, making money to fly away. But it's got to be a bad way. Making my ends, smoking big killer, getting high in the Benz. Big ballin', smashing, making my ends, smoking big killer, getting high in the Benz. In the wind, smoke goes as I crawl down on those, twanging Lorenzo, smoke all up in my nose. Your eyes get froze, as you see my load, candy red too dope. Then my top nine stroke, hitting my remote, sitting in my it's presidential B12 with that AMG. Getting go quick as I get high from KC to H9, connecting Southside. Now we worldwide, watch me high side. Fat pet, blowing killer, can't be denied. 187 thugs, oh yeah, we got love. Blowing sticky, green, and flow, woo, and that bug. Wanna be a baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala. Caller, get lit tonight. Switch the road tight, got spray my eyes. Now hit the highway, making money to fly away. But it's got to be a bad way.
I got shining with shortstop, and that's for real. So tell me how you feel. They'll make $1 million out my first record deal. Shortstop, putting up your motherfucker ear. really, really don't give a fuck. And I ain't drinking on no beer. Codeine when I see a pistol grip when I ride. Chuck here for life, baby, it's outside. We all with a reason, expedition navigator. That's how we be riding. Alligator suitcases, putting in the faces. And that's for real, shining harder than the grill. It's the play of the wheel. Down with the too low, youngster be a thug. So just get this in blood, I'm down with my thug. My girl in the ball, you know what's going down. Representing H-Town, I touch them on my side.
Wanna be a baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala. Caller, get laid tonight. Switch the road tight, got spray behind. Now hit the highway, making money to fly away. But it's got to be a better way, a better way, better way, yeah.
I got to get better, man, it got to move on. Switch from Motorola to a prime code phone. Broken two prone, now you know no dope pigeon. Used to call my spoke, now these floors count my inches. Had to get older, man, it's got colder. I done got grown, got a chip on my shoulder. Licks in Kuwait, got licks in Pakistan. Boys don't understand, virtual reality caravan. Double dose.
Well, guys, Uncle Dust with a reminder to make sure you share. If you're on social media, share a link, take a screenshot, do something, let somebody know, spit on somebody, give somebody a flower, smoke a joint with them, you know, put a midget on your back, tell them to listen to Uncle Dust on Spotify, support on the patreon.com/firecrotch. Tell them we're here, man. Tell them we're trying to be fucking historic ballers, okay? I'm trying to fight Joe Rogan in the fucking streets. Get down like a knife fight. I'm trying to get paid like Shane Gillis, Matt. I'm trying to be warm. We're trying to get rich off this shit. But I know that fans, listen. This is Uncle Dust. If you don't share my shit, I know that there's only 30 to 100 people that listen to this podcast every week. Guess what, guys? I can find you with my algorithm and analytics. And I'll track you down, go to your house, and see how you like it. I'm not going to share anything about your fucking job. What do you do? What are you, fucking laying pipes? I'm going to make sure that nobody knows about your pipe laying company. Are you in porn? Make sure nobody gives a shit about your shit dick. Tell everybody you got a shit dick. Okay? I don't care if you tell people I got a shit dick. Share it. Share a link. Say, this guy's got a goddamn shit dick. Okay? What's a shit dick you're asking? You tell me, bub. Sharing's caring, guys. Okay? Thank you. Continue having a gorgeous day.